I'm Kimberly Amici. Welcome to the Build Your Best Family podcast. This is a practical show to help you imagine, plan, and build your best family. We believe that the secret to having a happy family is not being perfect, but having purpose. Each week, I'll be here sharing with you lessons I've learned, conversations I've had that will equip you to create new habits, challenge mindsets, and build relationships that will allow your family to thrive. If you've been following this podcast for a while, you know I'm passionate about building culture and a family. What's great about culture is that it is not subject to parenting trends or specific tips and tricks, but it is built on sound principles that can create unity, growth, and success. In today's conversation with Dallas Burnett, we talked a lot about culture in the context of business and family and how we can create a strong one. We dive into his new book called Lift, where he uses storytelling to explain effective team building. We learn key lessons from his protagonist, Scott, about how to apply these principles to organizations and families. Dallas discusses routines, rituals, and reminders as tools for leadership and their parallels in family dynamics. Welcome, Dallas. I am so excited to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Kimberly. I'm so excited to be here. I'm excited for our conversation today.
So a question we ask all of our guests is, what is your family known for?
Oh, man, that is a fantastic question. We are probably known for a few things. Number one, we are probably known for being very loud, usually as it relates to laughing and carrying on. The second thing we're probably known for is we're a little bit musical. So my daughters play the fiddle and sing, and we have some fun with that. Now that they're getting older, we have some fun playing out. So we're probably known for those things. And then also, I want and hopefully we're known for really stepping in and leading a little bit. So I at least that's what we spend a lot of time coaching our daughters on. It's like, hey, if you're on the soccer team or the tennis team, they say run the lap, don't be the last one, be the first. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know. And so I hope servant leadership would be on the list as well.
Mm-hmm. So when I come to your house, like, what are we laughing about? What are we loud about?
Oh man. Okay. So I would say when the girls were younger, you would come to my house and you'd probably be surprised because you'd walk in the front door and there would be roller skating. They had a bad habit of roller skating around our house. Literally. Yeah. We can't do that anymore because we just had the floors redone. So I was like, okay, the roller skates have to get retired. You guys have to move outside. But I would come home and they're like, you know, they're all pretty close together. I'm father of three daughters. So I've got one at the time would have been 6, 5, and 4. And so they'd be all just going in this loop around our house, just wide open. So yeah, we have a lot of fun. We carry on, I mean, over good food. So if you came over to our house, you would have some good food that you would be smelling. Mm-hmm. We have a fun time over dinner, carrying on for the day and just what's going on and just kind of ribbing each other, giving a hard time here or there. So it's just all in fun. But yeah, we do enough crazy stuff. I wouldn't say grace is necessarily on our list. So you're more likely than not seeing me trip up the steps or somebody run into a door, you know, whatever. So it's usually something along those lines.
Yep. All right. So let's talk a little bit about your background and how you became passionate about helping organizations build strong and sustainable cultures. I mean, I shared with you earlier, this is a passion of mine, creating strong cultures within families. And so tell us a little bit about, your journey and your background.
Man, that's a great question. And it's a little bit loaded in the sense, I guess you can learn from great things and you can also learn from not so great things. And so I had several experiences in business that were just, I've had a very unique career in the sense that I've been able to see a lot of different organizations. I'm an entrepreneur, but I started out and have kind of went through companies and before I kind of found my own thing, just really saw a lot of different things in sales and marketing and strategy and process improvement and development and, you know, IT, all these different areas that I spent time in organizations. And a lot of them, I just had really bad bosses. Really, I don't have a really good answer to that other than they were just not great bosses, and they weren't bad people. They were just not great bosses. And some of the cultures that I was a part of were good, but they were not as good as they could have been. And so then in my mid 30s, I was given the opportunity to lead a startup, a venture funded startup, and had the ability to start creating a culture and saying, okay, I've seen all these things that didn't go well. Let's see if we can do this the right way. And it was at the time I was just kind of flying you know, by the seat of my pants. I didn't know, like, what is the right way? I've been modeled this. This has not been something I modeled. So I'm chewing up a lot of good information and good books, and I kind of had my theories of how it was supposed to go. And we had a really great time. We had a great team, had a bunch of young people on the team. We were hiring and growing, and it was just awesome. And so I got to experience that. Shortly after I exited that company, we got profitable, and then I exited out of that, and I went into another company. It was a totally different situation. It was a legacy business. And what I realized was this business was great, but it was toxic and people were rubbing against each other and just kind of hitting each other. It doesn't matter how good our business is. Doesn't matter how good our strategy is. If I can't get these people that are around me, and they're great people, to row the boat in the same direction and kind of catch the vision and be inspired, then what can we do? It's just going to be staying the Groundhog Day all over again. So for me, I was like, we gotta figure this out. How now, instead of creating a culture that was leaning on me to say, okay, what do we do with a bunch of young people that are kind of fresh out of school and they're kind of eyes wide open? I've got people that's been working together for 30 years. And so there was a different experiment. It was, how can we shift? Can we teach this old dog new tricks and show them something new and still inspire people to come together and be able to align around a common purpose and vision? And the answer is absolutely. Yes. Yes, you can. And so that's really kind of my mid to late 30s was where it became, I guess, real to me. And I love strategy and I love business and I love entrepreneurship, but it became real when I realized no matter how good the business idea or how good the strategy that I could create or produce, if I couldn't get people to believe in it, see the same vision and row the boat in the same direction, then I was not going to be able to achieve any kind of level of success. So that's really what drove me to focus on culture first. Mm-hmm. It's mostly out of necessity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's where I've learned a lot of the stuff. Yep. That's what you learn, is you're in the trenches and you're like, I need to solve this problem. This is not going the way I thought it was going to go, or this isn't as easy as I thought it was going to be. Sure. What am I missing?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. That was my experience as well. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so you wrote a book. It's a business book, but it is written at a fable format, right? So like a story format. And it is about the art and science of effective team building, because you just mentioned getting everybody to go in the same direction.
Yes.
So talk about that. What inspired you to convey these principles through storytelling as opposed to writing just a regular type book?
Oh, wow, that's a great,
Why that format?
So It's a great book. It's called Lift. And the reason that we wrote it in a business fable, first of all, is I was working with this company and we would produce these annual leadership summits for this organization. And so we just finished in January, and this is our 8th year of producing these leadership summits. And so we bring people in from all over the country and they've got 3 days of just this, you know, great speakers and breakout sessions. But one of the things we always do is we have this kind of theme going into it. And it's a theme where you may have Simon Sinek's, you know, book on Leaders Eat Last, or you may have, we've had different other books like the Fish Philosophy or the Energy Bus, and you just kind of have this and just sets the table so that people can consume this. And it's almost like a rhythm where they, okay, we're getting this content, we're getting this book, we need to cover this. And then we're going to go and finish with this big, big event, this summit at the end of it. So what I realized though, is that we would have some really great books that we would present. And we'd get to the summit and we'd have these sessions on them. And some years these sessions would just fall flat. They just, either the people wouldn't read the book or they would read some of it, but they just wouldn't be in tune with it. And what I realized is a lot of people just don't read. These were engineers. These are smart people, but they don't read a lot. They're not into it like I'm into it. Right. And so what I found is the years that we had the most energized, like engaged discussions around the content was when we presented them with a book that was a fable, like the, like the Energy Bus or like the Fish Philosophy. And we've done several over the years. And so I'd already written Move. When I wrote my second book, I was like, you know what, the second book, I want to capture this idea of how we grow, shape, create, strengthen cultures on teams. I want to do that in a way that's consumable to a lot of people and a lot of leaders. And it seems to me, in my experience, that people just like stories. And so I mean, business fables are fine. I like business fables. I want to get to the meat. So I'm like, okay. But then when you get into it, you start reading the story and you're like, oh, okay, this is a good story. All right. So that's kind of what we wanted to do. We wanted to kind of capture these principles and wrap them in a story, so it's easy for people to digest and kind of take in and see in context. Because I think sometimes people will hear a leadership principle or some type of tactic or whatever, but they don't know how to apply that in their own, you know, their own experience on their own job, their own team, at their own home. And I think this is a way that we just kind of tried to bring life to the principles and saying, okay, this is exactly these, this is not only the principle, but this is how it applied in a real life situation. So that's kind of what, that's kind of what led us, and really what led me to this whole book. Cause you don't, I don't want to write a book for no reason. And what led me to this was the company that was telling you about earlier that had the toxic kind of environment that was employees were kind of rubbing each other. There's a lot of great people, but it was just rubbing. We really shifted the culture of that organization. And at the same time, and it's not, I think sometimes if you're talking about the family or you're talking about a business or a team, you think that it, when we say culture, it's this ethereal, like out there, you know, sitting around a campfire talking, you know, whatever idea and pie in the sky approaching. It's actually not. And the other thing you think is maybe you're trading it off for this soft kind of skill thing with this performance. And I really want performance. And so I get afraid, like if I do these things over here, am I trading time that's going to cost me performance? It's the exact opposite. And so what we did was we not only changed the culture where people like enjoy coming to work and they're working together better, but we actually just the performance of the company just went just crazy, just went out the roof. We hit every, for 4 years that we were hitting, you know, record productions every year. And so for 4 years. So I think it's not either. So that process that I went through, I saw some individuals just develop in amazing ways and some teams develop in amazing ways. So I wanted to capture that, but I didn't want to capture it in a way that was personal. I'm saying this person, that person, and kind of do that. So we took some of the ideas and concepts that we were using inside that organization, those teams, and just turned it into a business fable. So that's kind of where it all, where the genesis came from.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic. I mean, some of the first leadership books I read back right shortly after I graduated college were Og Mandino and all of his, The Greatest Salesman on Earth. Right.
Oh, yeah,
and then the one about the angel. I mean, it's been years, but I, it's really easy then to share those books with my, you know, adult, young adult kids, because they're willing to read those.
Yes.
And I want them to have this knowledge, but they're not reading Simon Sinek. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, exactly. Exactly.
I love Simon Sinek. You know, start with the why is really one of the things that propelled me in Build Your Best Family, understanding your family's why and how that impacts you. But that's not something that they're reading, you know, fireside.
Oh, right. Exactly.
On a weekend night.
Yeah. It's like, what am I going to do on Saturday night? I think I'll go pick up a Simon Sinek, but no, that's, yeah. And I would say that's normal. I don't think that's most people. And so, yeah, we just wanted to make sure that we engage people in a way that they could pick up an easy read, but then you sneak a lot of really good concepts in it while they're reading a good story.
Yeah. Okay. So let's dig in a little bit about this book. Okay. So your protagonist is named Scott, and he learns about effective team building from an elderly aviator, I guess. That's the title, Lift.
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
All right. So let's talk about some of those key lessons and strategies that Scott discovers in his journey.
Yeah. So I would love to roll this into how more conversation about the family, because I think these are concepts I'd love to unpack them as it relates to the family for your audience that Build Your Best Family. And so There's some main principles. So first of all, we see the value of this mentorship. So in most business fables, you've got this kind of wise sage somewhere that this protagonist, you know, stumbles across in either a chance meeting or someone introduction, and then they are enlightening this person on their leadership journey. And so I don't want to gloss over that too much. I think that your listeners hopefully are tuning into this program and consuming content around the family because it is so important. We're just having some conversations with other families this past weekend and talking through some of the difficulties that they were experiencing, and then realizing that some of the solutions are not really rocket science. They're just the basic fundamentals, building blocks of relationships and teams. And so what we choose, we think has to be this like rocket ship, crazy, complicated solution. And it's like, oh, actually, if we can just do the fundamentals really well, it knocks out a lot of the problems. So One of the things that we talk about is one of the things that Scott discovers through Ray is the importance of reminders. And we talk through reminders in the book with a little acronym we call PEAK. And so PEAK, it stands for purpose, expectations, accountability, and keeping it simple. And so when you think about reminders, like we hear reminders and we immediately, my mind goes to like my meeting reminder pops up on my calendar and says, your meeting starts in 15 minutes. Well, reminders are like that, but that's not the type of reminder we're talking about. We're talking about as leaders of our family or of our companies and organizations, how are we reminding our teams? And then what do we remind them about? So what are we wanting to pop up on their screens of their life and say, this is what is really important for you to know? And so that's why we said PEAK. And I'll say this, you talked about the beginning with why your family. I think it's really important that we as leaders, whether we're leading our family or in organizations, to constantly be telling people why we're doing what we're doing and who they are. And so when mm-hmm. you think about reminding, it seems so fundamental and just so basic that, but we sometimes just don't do it. We just get out of the habit. So like when I'm talking with my daughters about going and being a leader at their practice or in this organization or at the school or whatever, it's very easy for me not to tell them who they are and why we do what we do. But when you think about it, that's exactly what we need to be doing, because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. runners run. And so many times I get to talk to my kids and I'm telling them what to do. You need to go do this. You need to go do that. You need to go do this. Yeah. But you don't have to tell a runner to run. Runners, by definition, run. So if I just remind you that you're a runner, then I don't have to sit there and say, run now, run now, run over here, run over there, right? So
I think true.
So one of the things that we like to focus on in any team is really focus on what are the reminders and what can you intentionally point to? Because it's all about intentionality. If we're building our best family, we're not going to do that by accident. We're going to do that with intentionality. And so what are the things that you can point to in your family that are reminders that you constantly go back to and say, this is who you are. This is what mm-hmm. we do. This is why we do it. And going back to it. So I think that's really important. So the book unpacks some of that. My wife, you know, when the girls were little, she would always take them to the grocery store. And they were, when I say little, I mean not little, you know, and this is like a parent's nightmare most of the time. It's like, I've got to take my kids to the grocery store. And this is like devastating. But the second letter in the PEAK framework, and we say PEAK because it's like the mountain peak. So we're reminding people where we're going. We're reminding people of the mountaintop that we're trying, the idea of the finish line at the top of the hill. And so one of the things is expectations. And so I thought this was fascinating. She just said, I would pull up in the parking lot and I would just set the expectation with the girls. Girls, we're going into the grocery store. Now they're like 5, 4, and 3. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. I expect you to behave this way. This is how we're going to, if this happens, do this. If that happens, do that. And she just was so clear with the expectations that she set with the girls. It wasn't bad. And she wasn't domineering and she wasn't like, you know, coming down on them. She just was very clear. Like, this is what we're going to do. And I mm-hmm. need you to be, you know, I need you to behave in this manner. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, they had a very good shopping experience at the grocery store. Now, nobody's perfect, and our kids are not perfect either. They were still 3 years old, right? So, but I would say it was something that I will always remember that she would tell me years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is one of my tricks is that we always stop in the parking lot before mm-hmm. we go in and share the expectations. So that's kind of some of the ideas that we unpack and lift as it relates to reminders and things like that with the teams. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that idea of expectations. I mean, there's been times when our children have done things and, you know, my first go-to is to discipline them or enforce some sort of consequence. And I've learned to back up and go, I actually didn't create an expectation of what they needed to do in this situation. Mm. And once you create that expectation and you remind them of it, then they can be held accountable to it. But I do have to ask myself, do I just assume that they know what they're supposed to be doing? Do I just assume that they, you know what I'm thinking or how they should behave or what's socially or culturally appropriate? Absolutely not. I mean, they just don't know. And so I love that idea of expectation, consistent reminders, over-communicating that with them. Yeah, even in an organization, reminding people why are we here? What are we doing? casting that vision for them is important.
I think too, I love what you said about, am I assuming that people know? And I think mm-hmm. I'm guilty of that. I think a lot of leaders are guilty of that. And whether you're leading your family or a team in an organization, we typically will not hold other people, we will not hold ourselves to the same standards that we hold other people. And part of that is just, we assume. And mm-hmm. We just assume incorrectly. So like if they're late, it's because I know they said they got stuck in traffic, but it's probably because they got up late and they should get up earlier. But if I'm late, it's like, no, I had a real reason. I had to, my kid was sick. So we kind of have to do the same thing with our families. Anytime I assume, it's like you, exactly what you said, you step back, you check yourself and say, look, if I was going to blame myself first and say that I was the reason that this didn't go well, what would that look like? I probably assumed that they knew how to handle the situation and maybe they didn't. Now, sometimes I say, well, maybe, but honestly, I don't think it's that. I think they did. We communicated that clearly. Yeah. Now they've got to be held accountable. But I think it's a good for any leader. I think that checking your assumptions first mm-hmm. is an act of humility that I think will lead to, to higher performing, teams and families. So, yeah.
So you mentioned reminders, and then of course there's routines and rituals that go along with that. So let's talk about more about those tools and how they can change our leadership, and then elaborate on those. And let's talk about how not only does it work in, business culture, but it also works in family culture.
Yeah. So those two are two of the other ideas that Scott learns as he journeys kind of on his leadership journey through the story, and as he gets to know Ray more and faces some trials and hardships in his organization that he's going through. And really what he's trying to do is understand how to coalesce his team around an idea and get them to perform better without the support of his superior in the story. And so we talk about routines. We have some. We go through routines, and again, it's something that most people will focus on a goal or an event or a thing, but they miss the bigger picture. I think it's like what Aristotle says, we are what we repeatedly do. And so one of the things that we talk about in the routine section is I would rather, and this goes back to coaching, so with Think We Thrive, we do a lot of coaching and development. We have a system that we're using that for. And when we look at the coaching process as a coach, I would much, much rather you, instead of setting some huge, big, hairy, audacious goal, I would much rather you set consistently a 1% improvement goal and get it just this month. If I can get you to get 1% better this month, or change your routine just a little bit, if you do this every day and I can shift that just a little bit, then that little bit every day is compounding and it adds up, right? And so one of the things that we want to focus on is we want to look at our routines, and really it comes down to the buckets that we're looking at. Are we routinely reflecting? Because if you're not routinely reflecting, then it's really hard for you to know where you're going and that you're going in the right direction. It's like the leadership book I'm sure you've read, where the guy climbs the tree and he looks out and they're all cutting the trees down below. And he's like, hey, I think we need to stop. And they're like, why? He's like, we're cutting in the wrong forest. And he goes, they go, shut up. We're making good progress. Right. Ugh. That's the symptom of people that are busy, but not reflective. They're not busy at the right stuff. So, asking ourselves, are we, and for a family, if you have, especially if you have young kids, that really is going to look like, have me and my spouse had a moment where we've pulled back and said, okay, we're stepping out of this crazy for a minute. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if it's a day and afternoon, it doesn't matter if it's a walking in the driveway, but we're separating ourselves from this kind of, a lot of work and a lot of urgent requirement needs of our kids, and separate ourselves to reflect on, are we going and moving in the direction as a family that we want to go? And where are the things that we need to shore up? And so we want to look at routines. If you can't point to a routine of reflection somewhere in your life, and you should have several, you should have, longer kind of forward-looking, you know, reflections, and you can have shorter ones in the day. Like in the, my part of my morning routine is has a reflection component into it, because I want to be present for the day, and I want to have some, you know, things that I remind myself in the mornings, mm-hmm. think about, and that's going to be part of my morning routine. So if you don't have specific routines of reflection, you need to be thinking about that. And then there's some action routines and looking at, you know, is what we're producing, you know, what we want to produce. And then finally at the end, we want to plan. I say reflect, because that's really saying what we've done is what we've done, kind of leading us where. But we also, if you're not planning those, having planning routines too. So planning, acting, and reflecting routines. If you can't find yourself and point to those in those three buckets, then you are missing a component mm-hmm. of something that can make you successful. Mm-hmm. I think one of the cool things I'd love to talk about in the family for the build your best family and your audience, I think they would enjoy, is one of the weirdest things that we put into the book as it relates to business and teams. And then I haven't seen this in any business books that I've read. And so that's one of the reasons that we felt strongly about putting it in, because I think it's so important. And that is the idea of rituals. And in a Western culture, in our society, we don't see them as consistently, I think, as some other cultures that are more ritual based. Mm-hmm. And I think that is to our detriment, because I think rituals have so many benefits. We are, mm-hmm. you know, I was talking to an anthropologist, a cultural anthropologist, and he was saying how the human, we're almost built for rituals because they help us make sense out of things that we can't make sense out of. You know, yeah. We attach some of these things to ideas. But I think for teams, it's allowing a team to come around and say, this is what's important about these certain things, and then do something that helps the team see it. And, you know, whether that's a recognition, whether we're going a prize or recognition, you know, I'll tell you a story. Like, I was working when I was in college, I was at a camp, and I was working at this camp, and every summer, so it was a summer camp, at the end of every summer, the camp director would come in and they would say, we'd have a vote of all the guys that was working on that camp. And we were, they called us yard dogs, because we were just sweating it out in the summer. We didn't have students who were counseling. We were just working. And so mm-hmm. at the end of that summer, they would come in and say, we're going to vote of who the person at the end of the summer that was the leader, the best kind of all around MVP. Yeah. Yeah. The big dog, the big yard dog. Right. So every year they would have this, you know, thing. And the person who was given the honor, the director of the camp, gave out this, and this is the weirdest thing ever, okay? I can't even remember why. But you know the hanging baskets of ferns that own like people's mm-hmm. porches, they have these like chains that you can buy, like a 6-link chain or something mm-hmm. like that. They're just these little garden chains. It's about 6 inches long, maybe a foot long. He mm-hmm. would give that out. Now, I think it's because the camp was, you know, not like, you know, making a ton of cash. And so like, what are they going to do? They're not going to give out like $1 million prize to these, you know, college kids, you know, as counselors. But he would give this chain link out, and he would say, this is, and he would have some speech about how you're the link in the chain or whatever it is. And so he would do that. And when you think about it, you're like, man, that sounds so hokey. Goodness gracious, so hokey. And yet I watched that happen for like 3 or 4 years. And my last year at that camp, I was voted to be that guy. Mm-hmm. And do you know that the new guy that came in did not give me, he said, that's hokey, and we're just not doing that because that's not important. And I was so offended.
Oh my gosh. You're probably like, this was my year.
This was it. I've watched these guys but here's what was, but it wasn't the chain that I was looking for, a chain. That was the symbol of me. I've looked at these guys that I've looked at and voted for being these great guys mm-hmm. in the past and said, these guys were leaders. These guys were impactful in my life. And they're in this group, and you've denied me the ability to be in that same mm-hmm. group. Now, what the flip side of the story is, I walk out of that meeting and I'm just kind of, whatever, you know, this is my last time, I'm out of here. And the new director's son was a sixth grader or fifth grader. And he had like strawberry hair and all the freckles on his cheeks. And he was just the cutest little kid, you know, and we had hit it off because I'd played with him in the pool and different things like that over the summer. And just kind of, he was living there. So he got to know all the guys on the staff, and he came up to me and he gave me this necklace that he made right after that meeting. And was like, I just wanted to tell you, thank you for being here and being my friend this summer.
Yeah.
And it was like this moment where I'm like, oh wow, I didn't get the chain that I had, but this fifth or sixth grader is doing the same thing. Mm. and still have it to this day. And it was like he finished the job. Now his dad saw no, he didn't see any kind of value in that. And yet this fifth grader does, and just does it out of just being kind. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the value of rituals, because they connect us and they bind us together. They help us regulate when we have uncertainty. A lot of times you'll see cultures that are going through things. If you're going through a change in your team, your organization, you typically will find solace in rituals, because it's something you can control. That's what the anthropologist was saying. It's like you can control a ritual. So you see that cultures that are in war-torn countries or right on the border of war, well, they will do more rituals just because they can control that. They can't control a lot in their environment. So one of the things we do as a family, I think that as a father of three daughters, but as a brother, I have three brothers. So I went from a house of all boys to a house of all girls. So it's like, you know, unbelievable difference there. But I feel like that transitional points, one of the things we talk about is, when do we do rituals? How do we do them? And transition stages is a great time to do rituals, whether you're in a team or a family. So one of the things our family does is we have rituals. We call it the rite of the root, the rite of the river, and the rite of the rock. And so we literally have rituals at these points. And one, the rite of the root, it happens. We take our daughters through that at the time they're like six or seven, eight, somewhere in that line, where you're coming out of baby kid stage and moving into being able to accept some responsibility. Mm-hmm. And this is a time where we take them through that and say, hey, look, you are now moving into a different phase. You are now able to accept some more responsibility. Here's our expectations, and here's the good things about this, right? And then another is going to be, you know, right about now, where they're kind of in their early teens, and it's about having more freedom, but having consequences to decisions. And so this idea of that, and this transition, like, look, you're starting to get, you know, starting to spread your own wings. It's great. You're still here, but you're starting that process. And then ultimately when they leave and fly out of the nest at 18, they'll have the rite of the rock. And so it's just these three things that we take them through. And what's crazy is, you know, I give them a necklace with, you know, a special design on it, like a Celtic thing on it. And man, they get that. You would have thought, I mean, they treat it like it's the royal, you know, queen's diamonds or something like that. And it's like a $20, you know, thing on Amazon, but that's not the point. Again, right. The point is it's a marker in their life. So I think that if you're wanting to build your best family, I think one of the things that people in our culture are not trained on how to make things important through rituals. And yet it will bond it, any kind of ritual. And there's a lot of people that, you know, are going to some type of religious institution, but there's a lot that don't. In fact, there's less people going to these religious institutions. That's fine. But there's a lot of rituals in many of those institutions. If you're not doing that, then you're losing the bonds that rituals create. Mm-hmm. And so you need to look at some things that you could do to add meaning and connection to your family. In my opinion, that would be some recommendations that I would give.
Yeah. We've done some things with our kids over the years, and they look forward to them, and they know that that's what makes them their family special. That's what sets us apart from other families. And that's, you know, and it's as they get older and they realize, what, everybody doesn't do this? Everybody doesn't have this sort of special thing at 13, or this special thing at 16, or this, then they got to start to go, oh, wow, my family's pretty cool.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly. And, you know, and I was talking to the anthropologist, and it's like, it doesn't have to be, don't overthink this. I mean, it might just be some funny little activity that you do before you eat dinner at night, or before you eat breakfast, or whenever you go on a trip, or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be, there's these kind of like everyday kind of like quick and fun kind of things that you end up doing. That's the ritual, you know, like the athletes that hits the sign as he goes out, play like a champion or whatever it is. You know, there's those type of things that's quick and just almost act as like little reminders. But then there's these more deeper, bigger events that are markers. And that's you need both. You need both things.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I love that. I think that's a good practice.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier about starting culture, but then you also talked about getting an organization that didn't have a great culture and needing to shift the direction of it. So let's talk a little bit about more about that for those parents who say, well, I haven't really done those things. This sounds great. But yeah, so what are some of the fundamental things that can start shifting a culture and transform it?
Well, that is a fantastic question, because there's so many people that are not given the building. You listen to, I mean, I guess it's Dave Ramsey that's like, you know, only hire the people that, you know, and they spend all the time on hiring great people. Well, sometimes you're promoted into a rollover team that you don't have an option of hiring, right? And sometimes you learn some things as a parent. I mean, I was talking to my wife the other day. I just screwed up something the other day. I can't remember what it was, but it was something stupid. I just messed it up. And I just looked at her and I was like, and she gave me grace, thankfully. But I looked at her and I said, look, I am so sorry. I know I just totally botched that, but this is the first family I've ever led. So, you know, we're just figuring this out as we go, and we're going to make some mistakes. And so I would say, first of all, if you find yourself in a situation where you're trying to get better, but you look back and you feel like you've made a lot of mistakes, I think the one of the things that's going to hold you back in leading your family to a new place is being held captive by the shoulds of all the things that you should have done, or you could have done, or you didn't do, or all these things, because that's just a lot of negative energy that you're going to put on yourself that's going to keep you from doing the things that you really need to do moving forward. So I'd say that's the first kind of perspective. I would say if you are going to start shifting the culture of your family, I would say the second thing is that, you know, really want to focus intentionally and just go back to like what we were saying before, is really start with getting clarity about where you want to go. And what, when you think about, if you were to wave a magic wand and your family was exactly the way you wanted it to be, and that could be relationally, it could be location, it could be, you know, monetary, whatever that is that you're thinking, this is where we need to be, then if you can define that, then that's something that you can point. Then what do I need? What would a family normally do that is living that life, that is being that? And then you can kind of work backwards on that. So I think for cultures, like in a company, I think you've got to be first, you can't give what you don't have. So like in the beginning, if you're feeling guilty, then you're going to give that. So you've got to get well and get in a good headspace to be able to give that. If you want your kids to be inspired, then you better go find some inspiration. You have got to be inspired. And that's one of the things that I feel like, and you asked the question early on, like, what are we known for? Like, I would hope that our kids have a pretty cool sense of wonder. They're very curious and they're interested in learning, but mainly because, you know, I think from early on, it's just like, everything's wow to me. Like, and my wife's like, wow, look at this. Oh my God. It's like a new discovery, everything. And it doesn't have to end when you're 2 years old, right? So if you want to give that to your family and you want your family to be inspired, you've got to be the first to do it. And so looking at how you spend your time, looking at the routines that you make and prioritize, what is your priorities? What are those things that are out of alignment with where you want to go? Where are the inconsistencies? Because I think a lot of times what happens, especially in toxic cultures, is we say one thing and then we do another. So we say, these are our values. So the first thing, goes back to that company I was telling you about. The first thing we did was we said, okay, we're going to bring everybody together. We're going to, because these people said, this is what's important. These are the values. And these people said, this is important. These are the values. We're bringing everybody together. And we're saying, what's the five things that we say are absolutely essential to being on this team? And so we crammed everybody into a room and they came up with, you know, these are the five things. And then we started moving in that direction. And that meant that if people were not reflecting these values, they were either coached and changed, or they ultimately got to a place where it was so uncomfortable that they left. And so when you start becoming that consistent around ideas, then people start believing what you say, because you're ultimately trying to build trust and credibility. In the same way with your kids, if you say, hey, you know, this is the expectation, but then you're not living up to the expectation, or you don't hold them to that expectation or standard, then all of a sudden, how much credibility do you actually earn in that, right? How much credibility, how much respect do you earn in that? Not in a negative way, not in a disciplinarian way, but just in a leadership way. And so I think that for me, that it really boils down to, when you're wanting to change a culture, you have to cast the vision of where you want to go. So that's, as a family, you're saying, this is what our family look like. And then you have to say, what are the things that are out of line with who we say we are and how we're going to get there. And then we've got to work as a leader, as a parent, and as a leader of a team. I've got to work really hard to hold the line and be really consistent around those things. And also, I would say this, it did not happen overnight. It was very hard at times. We had to make some very difficult decisions. But at the end of the day, if you can do that and make it through it, then I think that's when you start seeing the tides turn and people start believing and seeing the new way. And it's like, oh, it really can happen. This really can be like this. This really. And so, yeah, I think that's, I don't know if that, does that answer your question on that?
Yeah,
I think that's
absolutely
kind of what we experienced on that.
Yeah. Okay. One last question.
Okay.
Okay. So your book talks about turning individuals into a team and a team into leaders. This just reminds me of the season that I'm in right now. I have young adults and almost adult children, and we're still going to be a team, I think, for a while, hopefully for a very long time, but sort of that, you know, where we're the leaders, that's changing for us, right? So how do we take that team mentality, which is incredibly healthy and important for strong organizations, and then empower them to be leaders so that they can then continue to carry on with their beliefs and their values?
Oh, that's a great question. And it speaks to, we could just spend another hour talking about, about this topic, because that's so deep. But I ascribe to a philosophy of parenting in the sense that when we begin the relationship of parent to child, they absolutely are completely dependent on the parent. Mm-hmm. And my job as a parent is to begin to help them see that they need to trust me and listen to me as a parent, because that's their stage of life. But as they get older, as they move into that 7, 6, 7, 8 stage, I need to help guide them through this area of responsibility. So they're still under my care, right? But I'm starting to give them more weight. Okay, I need you to get up in the morning and make your bed, or, you know, clean your room, or whatever it is. I need you to get yourself ready for bed. And start handing over these responsibility items to them. They're assuming that responsibility from, like, say, 7 or 8 to early teen. When they get to early teen, I'm changing as a parent. And this is something that's very interesting, because, like, nobody gives you a rule book or a guidebook or a playbook on how to parent. And so you're like going, well, are we there yet? Or is this stage? Are we in a stage transition? And usually you hit this transition because you got the last stage figured out. And you're like, oh, wow, everything's kind of smooth, boom, and it just changes. And you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing now, right? And so, I don't know if you experienced that or not, but I have, we're actually going through that right now with our daughters are all moving into the teen years. And it's like, whoa, this is way different than what it was just 2 years ago, way different. And so, ultimately, if we parent well through those teen years, we're allowing them to get more freedom, and we're stepping back to more, instead of do this because, you know, do this because I'm your parent kind of thing, to more of the coaching role. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, if we do that well, and we allow them some more rope in their teen years instead of pull back, then when they launch and they're out, that's when we can move into more of a friendship role versus that. Now, if you flip that around and you go try to be a 4-year-old's friend, then it doesn't work very well, because then they're spoiled, entitled, and then you're doing all the work of that hardcore coaching and, like, do this because I say it, this because you're doing that at 16, and that doesn't work well. You know, so if we instill that, those expectations and the accountability early, they're more able to take it in, because that's what it is. And then once they see the value of that, then you can launch them and you're training them. So I would say that. Number two, I would say we have a system when we go on to do these leadership summits and we talk about delegation. And one of the things I think, as you go through these transitional periods in a family, we talk about this at work, is if you're promoting someone into a new role or responsibility, you've got to do that well. And most people will go, I'm doing this job now. And then they go, I can't do it. I'm too stressed out. I'm going to give you this. You go do this. And they just hand it to them. And then the person inevitably goes and fails. And then the person goes, oh, you can't find good help anymore. Nobody can do this. I'm the only one who can do this. And then they pull it back, and then they just stay stressed, and it's just a hot mess. Well, that's not their fault. I'm going to take it again. We're going to take that humble leadership approach, and we're going to say, well, how could I do that better? And it's the art of delegation that really wins the day. Mm-hmm. And I would say this, we call it the caveman philosophy of delegation. And that is very simple. It's easy to remember. It's me do, me do you watch, you do me watch, and you do up to. And what that essentially means is I'm doing it in the beginning, and then I'm going to bring you in. At work, it may be like, hey, I'm going to CC you on these emails that I'm sending to these clients, right? So that you can see how it's doing. And then we're going to talk about it. And then I'm going to do that for a little bit. And then I'm going to let you start replying to them. But I want you to CC me so that I know that you don't screw anything up and we can talk about it, right? And then we may say, and then now I feel comfortable with you doing that. And you can do that up to this level. This is where the level, okay, so if we're doing projects, you can respond to client, or you can estimate a project up to $10,000. You do up to, but if it goes over $10,000, you need to get me, right? So in the family, what that looks like is as you're going through these transitional periods, like especially as we're going through kids to teens, we're looking and saying, okay, what am I handing off to them? We're going to be handing off driving. You talked about, you know, your son being driving. And so it's like, okay, you don't just give them the keys and be like, good luck, you know? And so we're taking that a step at a time, step at a time. And so it's, you're watching me do it. I'm watching you do it. And then I'm going to give you some boundaries. But you would say, even after your son gets his license, he's driving, everything's good, you're going to say, hey, you can drive, but you can't drive here, or you can't drive after this time, or you can't drive on the interstate for the first 6 months, whatever it is, you're going to give him those, you do up to, and then you need to check in with me. And so it's constantly just going through that iteration. And so I would say as parents that we're trying to, if I was to say, build your best family, if you're going through, you're looking at these transition points and how to move from one to to the next, it's just a recognizing those points. And as you're launching them that way, you're just making sure that you've given them an opportunity to try and fail while they're under your care so that you can have that conversation so that hopefully when they're out of your care, they're living their best life. And they've had some iterations where they're just not hit in the face, you know, like, oh my gosh, this is real life. This is adulting. What? Nobody told me, you know, you know, it's just giving them opportunities to try and fail, I think, under your own care. Yep. And so that when they do exit and they kind of spread their wings and fly, that they know they have a better expectation of what, how to handle what's coming.
Yeah, that's good. It's really good. All right. So I could keep talking about these topics, but we'll have to wrap it up. So just before you leave, tell us a little bit more about your company, Think, Move, Thrive. I mean, we've heard about your book. Can't wait to read it. But tell us what else you do.
Yeah. So Think, Move, Thrive is we're a company that's trying to disrupt the coaching industry, not replace coaches, because we absolutely think they're absolutely necessary. We want more coaches in the world. But what we realized is that a lot of people can't, especially companies and organizations, can't afford to hire professional coaches for everyone in the organization, all the way from the top to the bottom. They can hire it for upper level managers or directors or VPs or CEOs, whatever. But a lot of people that need coaching are in the thick of it in the organizations. And so what we have done is created a coaching scaffolding system so that we can install it in organizations to help organizations create coaches inside their organization, leader coaches essentially, and drive coaching and development further down. And what that does is what we're seeing is it increases employee engagement and lowers turnover and really helps give feedback loops in the organization. So the organization kind of knows more of what's going on, and managers and leaders know more about their teams and can address issues before they percolate and blow up. So that's kind of what we do, man. We're all about leadership. We're all about coaching, and we're all about culture. So that's our sweet spots at Think, Move, Thrive.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. I had really enjoyed our conversation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kimberly. Glad to be here.
You can find Dallas on LinkedIn as well as his company, Think, Move, Thrive. I'll link to all of that, plus where you can find his book, in the show notes. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If so, I'd like to ask a favor. Can you head over to iTunes and leave us a review? Besides sharing this podcast with your friends, leaving a review is one of the most effective ways that you can support us and help get the word out about the incredible resources we have to offer. I'm passionate about helping families thrive, and your reviews help families find us. And remember, family culture isn't about perfect, it's about purpose.